"May I ask your business?" one of them asked. He was tall and thin, and had an imposing mane of snowy white hair. He carried himself with an air of self-importance, that kind of air usually assumed by senior servants, accustomed to ordering grooms and maids about. Silk pushed forward. "My friends and I have been out for a morning ride, and we were struck by the beauty of the house and its location. Is the owner about, perhaps?"
"His lordship, the Archduke, is away at present," the tall man replied.
"What a shame," Silk said. He looked around. "I am really taken with the place." Then he laughed. "Maybe it's as well that he's not at home. If he were, I might be tempted to make him an offer for his house."
"I don't know that his grace would be very interested," the servant said.
"I don't believe I know his grace," Silk said artfully. "Do you suppose you could tell me his name?"
"He is the Archduke Otrath, sir,"
the servant answered, puffing himself up slightly.
"He's a member of the Imperial family."
"Oh?"
"He's the third cousin, twice removed, of His Imperial Majesty Khal Zakath."
"Really? What an amazing thing! I'm so sorry to have missed him. I'll tell His Majesty that I stopped by the next time I see him, though."
"You know His Majesty?"
"Oh, yes. We're old friends."
"Might I ask your name, honored sir?"
"Oh, sorry. How very stupid of me. I am Prince Keldar of Thrasnia."
"The Prince Keldar?"
"I certainly hope there aren't any others," Silk laughed. "I can get into enough trouble all by myself."
"His Grace will be very sorry to have missed you, Your Highness."
"I will be in Melsina for several weeks. Perhaps I can call again. When do you expect His Grace to return?"
"That's very hard to say, Your Highness. He left not 3 days ago with some people from the mainland."
The white-haired servant paused thoughtfully.
"If you and your friends would not mind waiting for a few moments, Prince Keldar, I will go advise Her Grace, the Archduke's wife, that you are here. Her Grace has so few visitors out here, and she loves company. Won't you please come inside? I'll go to her at once and tell her that you are here."
They dismounted and followed him into a broad entryway. He bowed rather stiffly and went off down a corridor lined with tapestries.
"Very smooth, Keldar,"
Velvet murmured admiringly. "They don't call me Silk for nothing," he said, polishing his ring on the front of his pearl-gray doublet. When the tall servant returned, he had a slightly pained look on his face.
"Her Grace is a bit indisposed at the moment, Your Highness," he apologized to Silk.
"Oh, I'm sorry to hear that," Silk replied, with genuine regret. "Perhaps another time, then?"
"Oh, no, Your Highness. Her Grace insists on seeing you, but please, forgive her if she seems a bit, disoriented."
One of Silk's eyebrows shot up.
"It is the isolation, Your Highness," the servant confided, looking embarrassed. "Her Grace is not happy in this somewhat bucolic locale, and she has resorted to a certain amount of reinforcement in her exile."
"Reinforcement?"
"I trust I can count on Your Highness's discretion."
"Oh, of course."
"Her Grace takes some wine from time to time, Your Highness, and this appears to be one of those times. I am afraid she has had a bit more than is really good for her."
"This early in the morning?"
"Her Grace does not keep what one might call regular hours. If you will come with me, please."
As they followed the servant down a long corridor, Silk murmured back over his shoulder to the rest of them, "Follow my lead on this. Just smile and try not to look too startled at what I say."
"Don't you just love it when he gets devious?"
Velvet said admiringly to Synedra. The Archduchess was a lady in her mid-thirties. She had luxurious dark hair and very large eyes. She had a pouting lower lip and an ever so slightly overgenerous figure, which filled her burgundy gown to the point of overflowing. She was also as drunk as a lord. She had discarded her goblet and now drank directly from the decanter.
"And Skeldar,"
she hiccuped, trying to curtsy. Tsadi moved sinuously to catch her arm to prevent a disaster.
"Excuse me,"
she slurred to him.
"So nice of you."
"My pleasure, your grace," the eunuch said politely. She blinked at him several times.
"Are you really bald, or is that an affectation?"
"It's a cultural thing, your grace," he explained, bowing.
"Oh, how disappointing,"
she sighed, rubbing her hand over his head and taking another drink from the decanter.
"Could I offer you all something to drink?"
she asked brightly. Most of them declined with faint headshakes. Belden, however, stumped forward, with his hand extended.
"Why not?" the grotesque little man said. "Let's try a rip it at me, girl."
For some reason, he had lapsed into Feldegast's brogue. Belgarath rolled his eyes ceilingward. The Archduchess laughed uproariously and passed over the decanter. Belden drained it without stopping for breath.
"Very tasty," he belched,
tossing the decanter negligently into a corner.
"But ale's me preference, your ladyship. Wine's hard on the stomach so early of a morning."
"Ale it shall be, then,"
she crowed happily.
"We'll all sit around and swill ourselves into insensibility."
She fell back on a couch, exposing a great deal of herself in the process.
"Bring ale,"
she commanded the embarrassed servant.
"Lots and lots of ale."
"As your grace commands,"
the tall man replied stiffly, withdrawing.
"Nice enough fellow,"
the Archduchess slurred.
"But he's so terribly stuffy sometimes. He absolutely refuses to drink with me."
Her eyes suddenly filled with tears.
"Nobody wants a drink with me,"
she complained. She held out her arms imploringly to Belden, and he enfolded her in an embrace.
"You understand, don't you, my friend?"
she sobbed, burying her face in his shoulder.
"Oh, of course I do," he said, patting her shoulder. "There, there, me little darling. 'Twill be all right again soon."
The noble woman regained her composure, sniffed loudly, and fished for a handkerchief.
"It's not that I want to be like this, Your Highness,"
she apologized, trying to focus her eyes on Silk.
"It's just that I'm so absolutely bored out here. Otrath has all the social grace of an oyster. So he's imprisoned me out here in the hinterlands with nothing but the booming of the surf and the screeching of gulls for company. I so miss the balls and the dinner parties and the conversation in Malcina. What am I to do with myself out here?"
"'Tis cruel hard, me darlin',"
Belden agreed. He took the small cask of ale the servant cringingly brought, placed it between his knees, and bashed in the top with his gnarled fist.
"Would you care for a sup, sweeting?"
he asked the Duchess politely, holding out the cask.
"I'd drown if I tried to drink out of that,"
she protested, with a silly little laugh.
"Right ye are," he agreed. "You there,"
he said to Belgarath.
"Get the poor girl a cup or something."
Belgarath scowled at his gnarled brother, then wordlessly fetched a silver tankard from a sideboard. Belden dipped deeply into the cask with the tankard, wiped off the bottom with his sleeve, and offered it to their hostess.
"To your good health, me darlin',"
he said, drinking from the cask.
"You're so kind,"
she hiccuped. Then she drained off about half the tankard with foamy ale spilling out of the corners of her mouth, and down the front of her gown.
We were very sorry to have missed His Grace, Silk said, obviously a little nonplussed by Belden's rough-and-ready approach to a high-born, though tipsy, lady.
You didn't miss a thing, Your Highness, she burped, politely covering her mouth. My husband's a fat green toad with all the charm of a dead rat. He spends his time trying to decipher his proximity to the imperial throne. Kalzakath has no heir, so all the imperial cousins sit around waiting for one another to die and trying to cement alliances. Have you ever been in Malzeth, Your Highness? It's an absolutely ghastly place. Frankly, imperial crown or no, I'd sooner live in hell.
She drained her tankard and handed it wordlessly back to Belden. Then she looked around brightly, her eyes slightly unfocused.
But my dear Prince Keldar, she said, you haven't introduced me to your friends as yet.
Oh, how terribly forgetful of me, Your Grace, he exclaimed, slapping his hand to his forehead. He rose formally to his feet.
Your Grace, I have the honor to present Her Grace, the Duchess of Arrat.
He held his hand out grandly to Polgara, who rose and curtsied.
Your Grace, she murmured.
Your Grace,
the Archduchess replied, trying to rise but not quite succeeding.
There, there, me darling, Belden said, pressing down on her shoulder to keep her more or less in place.
"'Tis early, and we're all friends. There's no need at all for us to be going through all those tiresome formalities.' "'I like him,'
the noblewoman said, pointing at Belden with one hand and dipping out more ale with the other.
"'Can I keep him?'
"'Sorry, Your Grace,' Belgarath said. "'We might need him later on.'
"'So grim a face,'
she observed, looking at the ancient sorcerer. She grinned roguishly.
"'I'll wager I could make you smile,'
Silk rushed on.
"'Her Highness Princess Zinedra of the House of Borun, and the Margravine Lassalle of Drasnia. The young man with the sword is known as the Lord of the Western Sea. Oh, it's an obscure title, I'll grant you, but his people—' "'are an obscure sort of folk.'
Geryon bowed deeply to the tipsy Archduchess.
"'So great a sword you have, my lord,'
she replied.
"'It's a family heirloom, Your Grace. I'm more or less obliged to carry it.'
"'The others have no titles they care to acknowledge,' Silk said. "'They are business associates, and we don't worry about titles where money is concerned.'
"'Do you have a title?'
the lady asked Belden.
"'Several, me little darlin',' he replied in an offhand way. "'But none from any land ye'd be recognizin' the name of, most of em havin' disappeared long ago.'
He raised the cask again and drank noisily.
"'What a dear little man you are,'
she said in a smoldering sort of voice.
"'Tis me charm, darlin'.' he replied with a resigned sort of sigh. "'Tis always been me bane, this charming quality about me. Sometimes I must actually hide myself to keep off the maids, overpowered with unreasoning passion.'
He sighed again, then belched.
"'We might want to talk about that one of these days,' she suggested.
Silk was obviously out of his depth here. He said lamely.
As I was saying, we are sorry to have missed the Archduke.
I can't for the life of me think why, Your Highness,
the lady said bluntly.
My husband's an unmitigated ass, and he doesn't bathe regularly. He has wild aspirations about the imperial throne, and very little in the way of prospects in that direction.
She held out her tankard to Belden.
"'Would you, dear?'
He squinted down into the cask.
"'It could just be that we'll need another, me darlin',' he suggested.
"'I've got a cellar full,'
she sighed happily.
"'We can go on like this for days.
if you'd like.
Belgorath and Belden exchanged a long look.
Never mind, Belgorath said. But never mind.
You were saying that your husband has imperial ambitions, Your Grace? Silk floundered on.
Can you imagine that idiot as Emperor of Meloria?
She sneered.
Half the time he can't even get his shoes on the right feet. Fortunately, he's a long way down the line of secession.
Garion suddenly remembered something.
Has anyone ever suggested anything to him that might have encouraged these ambitions?
I certainly didn't,
she declared. She frowned blearily at the far wall.
Now that you mention it, though, there was a fellow who came through here a few years ago. A fellow with white eyes. Have you ever seen anybody with eyes like that? It makes your blood run cold. Anyway, he and the Archduke went off to my husband's study to talk.
She snorted derisively.
Study? I don't think my idiot husband can even read. He can barely talk to me. But he calls the room his study. Isn't that absurd? Well, at any rate, that happened at a time when I was still curious about the oaf's affairs. I'd had one of the footmen drill a hole through the wall so I could watch and hear what that fool was up to.
Her lower lip began to tremble.
Not long after that, I saw him in there with the upstairs maid.
She threw her arms out tragically, sloshing ale on Belden.
Betrayed!
She cried.
In my own house!
What were they talking about? Garion asked her gently. Your husband, and the white-eyed man, I mean.
White-eyes told my husband that somebody named Zenramos could guarantee him succession to the throne in Malzeth. That name sounds familiar for some reason. Has anybody ever heard it before?
She looked around, trying to focus her eyes. Not that I recall, Silk lied blandly. Have you ever seen this white-eyed man again? The Archduchess was busily trying to dip the last bit of ale out of the cask.
What?
She asked. The white-eyed man, Belgorath said impatiently. Did he ever come back?
Of course.
The lady leaned back and lustily drained her tankard.
He was here just a few days ago. He came here with some woman in a black satin robe and a little boy,
she belched modestly.
Can you give that little bell pull over there a bit of a jerk, my twisted little friend?
She asked Belden.
I think we've used up all this cask, and I'm still sort of thirsty.
I'll see to it at once, me darling,
the hunchback stumped to the bell pull.
It's so very nice to have friends about,
the Archduchess said dreamily. Then her head drooped to one side, and she began to snore.
Wake her up, Paul, Belgorath said.
Yes, father. It was a very light surge, but the tipsy noblewoman's eyes popped open immediately.
Where was I?
She asked.
You were telling us about the visit of the white-eyed man a few days back, Your Grace, Silk supplied.
Oh, yes. He came in about dusk. Him and that hag in the black satin.
Hag?
Silk asked.
She must have been a hag. She went to a lot of trouble to keep her face covered. The little boy was adorable, though. Reddish blonde curls and the bluest eyes you ever saw. I got some milk for him 'cause he was hungry. Anyway, White Eyes and the hag went off along with my husband, and then they all took horses and rode off. The toad, my husband, told me that he was going to be gone for a while, and that I should send for my dressmaker something about a gown suitable for an imperial coronation. I forget exactly.
What happened to the little boy?
Sinedra asked in a very tense voice. The Archduchess shrugged.
Who knows? As far as I know, they did take him with them.
She sighed.
I'm sadly so sleepy, she murmured.
Did your husband give you any hint about where they were going? Silk asked her. She waved her hands helplessly.
I stopped listening to him years ago. We have a small yacht in a cove about a mile from here. It's gone, so I think they took that. My husband was saying something about those commercial wharves south of the city.
She looked around.
Has that other cask of ale got here yet?
She asked drowsily.
'Twill only be a moment or two, meet Arlen,
Belden assured her, in a gentle voice.
Oh, good.
You need anything more? Silk quietly asked Belgarath.
I don't think so. The old man turned to his daughter. Put her to sleep again, Paul.
There's no need, father, she replied. She looked rather sadly at the lush-bodied noblewoman, who had once again wrapped her arms about Belden's neck, burrowed her face into his shoulder, and was lightly snoring. Gently, the dwarf hunchback disengaged her arms and laid her softly on the couch. He straightened her gown, then crossed the room, picked up a comforter from a divan, returned, and covered her with it.
"Sleep well, my lady," he murmured,
touching her face with one sad hand. Then he turned and glared pugnaciously at Belgarath.
"Well?"
he demanded, in the tone of a man ready to fight.
"I didn't say anything," Belgarath said to him, wordlessly.
Tenedra rose, went to the hideous little man, embraced him and kissed him on the cheek.
"Well, what was that all about?"
he asked suspiciously.
"I didn't say anything either,"
she replied, absently picking a few pieces of straw out of his beard and handing them to him. Chapter 6 As they emerged from the house, Geryon went immediately to Kretzian and swung up into his saddle.
"What have you got in mind?" Silk asked him.
"I'm going to stay on the trail," Geryon replied.
"Why? What it's going to do is run down to that cove the lady mentioned, and then go out to sea again."
Geryon looked at him helplessly.
"I'd say that the best thing for us to do right now is get back to Mersina as quickly as possible. I have a lot of people working for me there. I'll saturate those commercial wharves with men, the same way we did in Gerard. Narades won't be hard to follow."
"Why don't I just take the orb and go down to the wharves myself?" Geryon protested.
"Because all you will find out that way is which wharf she sailed from. We need more than that."
Silk looked sympathetically at his friend.
"I know you're impatient, Geryon. We all are. But my way is going to be faster, actually. My people can find out when Zandromas sailed and where she was going. That's the thing we really have to know."
"All right, then," Belgarath said. "Let's ride."
They mounted quickly and rode at a canter back up the drive to the road. Then they went south toward Malcina at a gallop. It was about noon when they reached the north gate, and not long after that when they dismounted in front of Silk's house. They went inside and on up the stairs to the sitting room.
"Would you ask Vetter to come up?" the little man asked a passing servant as they entered the room.
"I want your highness."
"I'd say we'd better pack again," Silk suggested, removing his businessman's robe. "As soon as we find out where Zandromos is going, I think we'll be leaving again."
Sadi smiled faintly.
"Poor Zith," he murmured. "She's getting very tired of traveling."
"She's not the only one," Velvet said a bit ruefully. "When this is all over, I don't think I'll ever want to even look at another horse."
There was a polite knock at the door, and Vetter opened it.
"You wanted to see me, your highness?" he asked.
"Yes, Vetter, come in, please." Silk was pacing up and down, his eyes deep in thought. "We have been looking for some people."
"I surmised as much, your highness."
"Good.
We know that these people came to Messina not too long back, and then they left again about 3 days ago. We need to know where they went.
Very well, Your Highness. Can you give me a description?
I was just getting to that. There were two men, a woman, and a small boy. One of the men was the Archduke Otrath. Do you know him? Vetter nodded.
I can give our people an accurate description of him, yes.
Very good, Vetter. The other man is named Naradus.
I have heard the name, Your Highness, but I don't think I have ever seen him.
You wouldn't have forgotten him. His eyes are totally white.
He is a blind man?
No, but his eyes have no color to them.
That should make things simpler.
I thought it might. The woman's been going to some trouble to keep her face covered, but she'll be with the Archduke and Naradus. We have picked up the information that they may have sailed from one of the commercial wharves to the south of the city. Start out by concentrating the search there. Send every man you can put your hands on down there. Have them talk with everybody on those wharves. We need information, and we need it fast. Spread money around if you have to. I want to know when they left, on which ship, and where they were going. If the ship happens to be back in port, bring me one of the sailors. Or even better yet, the captain. Speed is essential, Vetter.
I will see to it at once, Your Highness. I will have several hundred men on those wharves within the hour, and I'll keep you posted about the progress of the search. Will there be anything else?
Silk frowned. Yes, he decided. We came to Messina aboard one of our own ships. It should still be down in the harbor. Send someone to the captain and tell him to make ready to sail again. We will be leaving as soon as we get the information.
I will attend to it.
Vetter bowed and quietly left the room.
He seems like a good man, Belden noted.
One of my best, Silk agreed. He gets things done, and he never gets excited. The little man smiled. I have heard that Braedor's been trying to lure him back. Oh, but I've got more money than Braedor has.
Belden grunted and looked at Belgarath.
We've got some things to sort out, he said. Why is Zandramos saddling herself with this Archduke? This whole side trip of hers didn't make any sense at all.
Of course it did.
I'm sure you'll explain that to me. Sometime in the next week or so.
Belgarath fished around inside his tunic and pulled out a tattered scrap of paper. He looked at it.
This is it, he grunted.
He held the paper out in front of him.
Behold, in the days which shall follow the ascension of the Dark God into the heavens, shall the King of the East and the King of the South do war upon each other. And this shall be a sign unto ye, that the day of the meeting is at hand. Hasten, therefore, unto the place which is no more, when battles do rage upon the plains of the south. Take with thee the chosen sacrifice and a king of Angarak, to bear witness to what shall come to pass. For lo, whichever of ye cometh into the presence of Thrag Sardius with the sacrifice, and an Angarak king, shall be exalted above all of the rest, and shall have dominion over them. And know further that in the moment of sacrifice shall the Dark God be reborn, and he shall triumph over the Child of Light in the instant of his rebirth.
What a fascinating piece of gibberish, Belden said. Where did you come by it?
We picked it up in Tol Muragos, Belgarath shrugged. It is a part of the Grolem prophecies of Rakthal. I told you about it before.
No, Belden disagreed. As a matter of fact, you didn't.
I must have.
I'm sorry, Belgarath,
the grubby little man said from between clenched teeth.
You didn't.
What an amazing thing, Belgarath frowned. It must have completely slipped my mind.
We knew it was going to happen eventually, Paul, Belden said. The old boys finally slipped over the line into senility.
Be nice, Uncle, she murmured.
Are you positive?
I didn't tell you about this, Belgareth said a little plaintively.
There's no such thing as positive, Belden replied automatically, it seemed.
I'm awfully glad you said that, Belgareth said just a bit smugly.
Stop that.
Stop what?
Don't try to use my own prejudices against me. Where does this Grolem insanity put us?
Grolems obey orders beyond the point of reason.
So do we, when you get down to it.
Perhaps. But at least we question the orders now and then. Grolems don't. They follow instructions blindly. When we are in Rak Erga, we saw the Hierarch, Agachak, bullying King Urgot about this. Agachak knows that he has to have an Angrak king in tow if he is going to have any chance at all when he gets to this place of the final meeting. He is going to take Urgot, even if he has to drag him by the hair. Up until now, Zandromos has not bothered herself about the request.
Well, she must be planning to kill Zakath, then, Durnik said, and then put this Archduke on the throne in his place.
She won't even have to do that, Durnik. All you need to be called a king in Angrak society is a hint of royal blood, a coronation ceremony, and recognition by a major Grolem priest. Back in the old days, every clan chief was a king. It did not really matter that much, because all of the power was in the hands of Torak anyway. They all had crowns and thrones, though. Anyway, Zandromos is a recognized Grolem priest, or priestess, in this case. Otrath is of royal blood. A coronation, spurious or not, would qualify him as the king of Angrak, and that would satisfy the prophecy.
It still seems a little questionable to me, Durnik said. This comes from a man whose people elected a rutabaga farmer as their first king, Belden said.
Actually, Fundur the Magnificent wasn't a bad king, Belgareth said. At least once he got the hang of it all. Farmers always make good kings. They know what is important. At any rate, Otrath will be king enough to fulfill the prophecy, and that means that Zandromos has everything she needs now. She has Garen and an Angrak king.
Do we need one too, then? Durnik asked. An Angrak king, I mean.
No. We'd need an Elarn king. I think Garion qualifies.
Wasn't this complicated last time, was it?
Actually, it was. Last time, Garion was the Riven king, as well as the Child of Light. Torak was both king and god, and he was the Child of Dark.
Oh, it was the sacrifice, then.
Belgareth smiled affectionately at the good man.
You were, Durnik, he said gently. Remember?
Oh, Durnik said, looking a bit embarrassed. I forget about that sometimes.
I wouldn't be at all surprised, Belden growled. Getting killed is the sort of thing that might tend to make one's memory wander just a bit.
That's enough of that, uncle, Polgara said dangerously, putting a protective arm about Durnik's shoulders. Garion suddenly realized that not one of them had ever spoken with Durnik about that terrible time between the moment Zadar had killed him and the moment when the orb and the gods had returned him to life. He had the very strong feeling that Polgara fully intended to keep it that way.
"She's completed all her tasks, then, hasn't she?"
Zenedra asked sadly.
"Zandromos, I mean. She has my son, and an Angrak king. I do so wish I could see him one more time before I die."
"Die?" Garion asked incredulously. "What do you mean, die?"
"One of us is going to," she said simply. "I'm sure it's going to be me. There's no other reason for me being along, is there? We all have tasks to perform. Mine is to die, I think."
"Nonsense."
"Really?"
she sighed.
"Actually, Zandromos still has several more tasks," Belgareth told her. "She has to deal with Irvan at the very least."
"And Agachak, I think," Zadi added. "He wants to play too, as I recall."
"Agachak's in Tol Muragos," Silk objected.
So were we, until some months back, the eunuch pointed out. All it takes to get to Meloria from Tol Murgos is a boat, and a little luck with the weather.
Xandramas has one other thing she has to do as well,
Velvet said, moving over until she was beside Zenedra and wrapping her arms about the sad little queen.
Oh?
Zenedra said without much interest.
What's that? The prophecy told Geryon that she still doesn't know where the place which is no more is. She can't go there until she finds out, can she?
Zenedra's face brightened just a bit.
That's true, isn't it?
She conceded.
I suppose it's something.
She said it, laying her head against Velvet's shoulder.
Xandramas is not the only one with things left to do, Belgrath said. I still have to find an unmutilated copy of the Ashabin Oracles.
He looked at Silk.
How long do you think it's going to take your men to find out what we need to know?
Silk spread his hands.
It's a little hard to say, he admitted. A lot could depend on luck. A day, at the most, I'd imagine.
How fast is that ship of yours? Geryon asked him. I mean, can it go any faster than it did when we were coming here?
Oh, not by very much, Silk replied. Melusines are better shipbuilders than Angarax, but that ship was built to carry cargo, not to win races. If the wind gets too strong, the captain's going to have to shorten his sails.
I'd give a lot to have a Kerrick warship right now, Geryon said. A fast boat could make up for a lot of our lost time.
He gazed thoughtfully at the floor.
It wouldn't really be too hard, would it? He suggested. He looked at Belgarath. Maybe you and I could put our heads together and... He made a kind of vague gesture with his hand.
Geryon, Durnick interrupted him. Even if you did have a Kerrick boat, who would you find to sail her? I don't think the sailors here would understand what's involved.
Oh, Geryon said glumly. I hadn't thought about that, I guess. There was a light rap at the door, and Vetter entered carrying a sheaf of parchments.
The men have been dispatched to the south wharves, Your Highness, he reported. You suggested that the matter was of some urgency, so I took the liberty of posting couriers on fast horses to central locations near the waterfront. As soon as anyone gets news of any kind, the word should reach us here within 5 minutes.
He glanced at Zenedra.
I hope that will relieve some of Her Majesty's anxiety, he added.
Her, Silk burst out, then controlled himself. He stared at his factor for a moment and then burst out laughing.
How did you find out, Vetter? I didn't introduce anybody. Please, Your Highness, Vetter replied with a pained look. You didn't engage me in this position to be stupid, did you? I have maintained certain contacts with my former associates in Malzeth, so I more or less know who your guests are and what your mission is. You chose not to mention the matter, so I did not make an issue of it. But you are not paying me to keep my eyes and ears closed, are you?
Don't you just love Melusines?
Velvet said to Tzadi. Tzadi, however, was already looking at Vetter with certain interest.
It may just happen that in time I'll be able to resolve the slight misunderstanding I presently have with my queen, he said delicately to Silk's factor. Should that happen, I might want to make you aware of certain employment opportunities in Stiffy's store.
Tzadi, Silk gasped.
Business is business, Prince Skeldar. Tzadi said blandly.
Vetter smiled.
There are these few documents, Your Highness, he said to Silk, handing over the parchments he carried. As long as you are waiting, I thought you might want to glance at them. A few require your signature.
Silk sighed. I suppose I might as well, he agreed.
It does save time, Your Highness. Sometimes it takes quite a while for things to catch up with you.
Silk rifled through the stack. This all seems fairly routine. Is there anything else of note going on?
The house is being watched, Your Highness, Vetter reported. A couple of Rolas, secret policemen, I imagine they'll try to follow you when you leave.
Silk frowned. Oh, I'd forgotten about him. Is there some way to get them off of our trail?
I think I can manage that, Your Highness.
Nothing fatal, though, Silk cautioned. The Raven King here disapproves of random fatalities. He grinned at Garion.
I think we will be able to deal with the situation without bloodshed, Your Highness.
Anything else I should know about?
The consortium will make an offer on our bean holdings tomorrow morning, Vetter replied. They'll start at 3 points below market and go as high as 5 above it.
How did you find that out? Silk looked amazed.
I have bribed one of the members, Vetter shrugged. I promised to give him a quarter-point commission on everything over 10. A bit generous, perhaps, but we may need him again sometime. And now I'll have a hold on him.
Oh, that's worth a quarter of a point right there.
I thought so myself, Your Highness, Vetter laughed suddenly. One other thing, Prince Keldar. We have this investment opportunity.
Oh?
Actually, it is more in the nature of a charitable contribution.
I gave at the office, Silk said with an absolutely straight face. Then his nose twitched slightly. It wouldn't hurt to hear about it, though, I guess.
There's a very grubby little alchemist at the university, Vetter explained. He absolutely swears that he can turn brass into gold.
Well, now, Silk's eyes brightened. Vetter held up a cautioning hand.
The cost, however, is prohibitive at this time. It doesn't make much sense to spend 2 pieces of gold to get back one.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say so.
The little clubfoot maintains that he can reduce the cost, though. He's been approaching every businessman in Melsina about the project. He needs a rich patron to underwrite the cost of his experiments.
Did you look into the matter at all?
Of course. Unless he is a very skilled trickster, it appears that he actually can turn brass into gold. He has a rather peculiar reputation. They say that he has been around for centuries. He's got a bad temper and he smells awful. The chemicals he uses, I understand.
Belgorath's eyes suddenly went very wide. What did you call him? He demanded.
I don't believe I mentioned his name, Ancient One, Vetter replied. He is called Senji.
I don't mean his name. Describe him.
He is short and mostly bald. He wears a beard, though most of his whiskers have been singed off. Sometimes his experiments go awry, and there have been explosions. Oh, and he has a club foot, the left one, I believe.
That's it, Belgorath exclaimed, snapping his fingers. Don't be cryptic, Father, Polgara said primly. The prophecy told Garion that somebody was going to say something to us in passing today that was very important. This is it.
I don't quite...
At Asheba, Saradis told us to seek out the club-footed one because he'd help us in our search.
There are many men with club feet in the world, Father.
I know, but the prophecy went out of its way to introduce this one.
Introduce?
Oh, maybe that's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
It does sort of fit, Paul, Belden said. As I remember, we were talking about the Ashabine oracles when Saradis told us about this clubfoot. She said that Zandramos has one uncut copy, Nahaz has another, and that this clubfoot has the third, or knows where it is.
It's pretty thin, Belgorath, Durnick said dubiously. We've got time enough to chase it down, the old man replied. We can't go anywhere until we find out where Zandramos is going anyway. He looked at Vetter. Where do we find this Senji?
He's on the faculty of the College of Applied Alchemy at the university, Ancient One.
All right. I'll take Garion, and we will go there. The rest of you might as well get ready to leave.
Grandfather,
Geryon protested. I have to stay here. I want to hear the word about Zandromas with my own ears.
Paul can listen for you. I might need you along to help persuade the alchemist to talk to me. Bring the orb, but leave the sword behind.
Why the orb?
Let's just call it a hunch.
I'll come with you, Belden said, rising to his feet.
There's no need of that.
Oh, yes, there is. Your memory seems to be failing a bit, Belgarath. You forget to tell me things. If I'm there when you locate the oracles, I'll be able to save you all of the time and trouble of trying to remember.
Chapter 7 The University of Malsina was a sprawling complex of buildings situated in a vast park. The buildings were old and stately, and the trees dotting the close-clipped lawns were gnarled with age. There was a kind of secure serenity about the place that bespoke a dedication to the life of the mind. A calm came over Geryon as he walked with the two old sorcerers across the green lawn. But there was a kind of melancholy as well. He sighed.
"What's the problem?" Belgarath asked him.
"Oh, I don't know, Grandfather. Sometimes I wish I might have had the chance to come to a place like this. It might be kind of nice to study something for no reason, except that you want to know about it. Most of my studying has been pretty urgent, you know. Find the answer, or the world will come to an end."
"Universities are overrated places," Belden said. "Too many young men attend simply because their fathers insist, and they spend more time carousing than they do studying. The noise is distracting to the serious student. Stick to studying alone. You get more done."
He looked at Belgarath.
"Have you got even the remotest idea where we are going to find this Senji?"
"Vetter said that he is a member of the faculty of the College of Applied Alchemy. I would imagine that's the place to start."
"Logic, Belgarath? You? The next question that pops to mind is where are we going to find the College of Applied Alchemy?"
Belgarath stopped a robed scholar who was walking across the lawn with an open book in his hand.
"Excuse me, learned sir," he said politely, "but could you direct me to the College of Applied Alchemy?"
The scholar said, looking up from his book.
"The College of Applied Alchemy. Could you tell me where I could find it?"
"The sciences are all down that way," the scholar said. "Near the theology department."
He waved rather vaguely toward the south end of the campus.
"Thank you," Belgarath said. "You're too kind."
"It's a scholar's duty to provide instruction and direction," the fellow replied pompously.
"Oh, yes," Belgarath murmured. "Sometimes I lose sight of that."
They walked on in the direction the scholar had indicated.
"If he doesn't give his students any more specific directions than that, they probably come out of this place with a rather vague idea of the world," Belden observed.
The directions they received from others gradually grew more precise, and they finally reached a blocky-looking building constructed of thick gray rock and solidly buttressed along its walls. They went up the steps in front and entered a hallway that was also shored up with stout buttresses.
"I don't quite follow the reason for all of the interior reinforcement," Geryon confessed.
As if in answer to his question, there came a thunderous detonation from behind a door partway up the hall. The door blew outward violently, and clouds of reeking smoke came pouring out.
"Oh," Geryon said. "Now I understand."
A fellow with a dazed look on his face and with his clothes hanging from his body and smoking tatters came staggering out through the smoke.
"Too much sulfur," he was muttering over and over again. "Too much sulfur."
"Excuse me," Belgarath said. "Do you by any chance know where we might find the alchemist, Senji?"
"Too much sulfur,"
the experimenter said, looking blankly at Belgarath.
"Senji,"
the old man repeated. Could you tell us where to find him? The tattered fellow frowned.
What?
He said blankly.
Let me, Belden said. Can you tell us where to find Sinji?
He bellowed at the top of his lungs.
He's got a club foot.
Well,
the man replied, shaking his head to clear his befuddlement.
His laboratory's on the top floor, down toward the other end. Well, thank you,
Belden shouted at him.
Too much sulfur, that's the problem, all right. I put in too much sulfur.
Why were you shouting at him? Beldroth asked curiously, as the three of them went on down the hall.
Well, I've been in the middle of a few explosions myself,
the hunchback shrugged.
I was always deaf as a post for a week or two afterward.
Oh. They went up two flights of stairs to the top floor. They passed another door that had only recently been exploded out of its casement. Belgarath poked his head through the opening.
Where can we find Sinji?
He shouted into the room. There was a mumbled reply.
Last door on the left,
the old man grunted, leading the way. Alchemy seems to be a fairly dangerous occupation, Geryon noted.
Also fairly stupid, Belden growled. If they want gold so badly, why don't they just go dig it up?
I don't think that's occurred to very many of them, Belgareth said. He stopped before the last door on the left, a door showing signs of recent repair. He knocked.
Go away,
a rusty-sounding voice replied.
We need to talk with you, Sinji, Belgareth called mildly.
The rusty voice told him at some length what he could do with his need to talk. Most of the words were very colorful. Belgarath's face grew set. He gathered himself up and spoke a single word. The door disappeared with a shocking sound.
Now, that's something you don't see around here very much,
the grubby little man sitting in the midst of the splintered remains of his door said in a conversational tone.
I can't remember the last time I saw a door blow in.
He started picking splinters out of his beard.
Are you all right?
Geryon asked him.
Of course. Just a little. Surprised is all. When you've been blown up as many times as I have, you sort of get used to the idea. Does one of you want to pull this door off of me?
Belden stumped forward and lifted the remains of the door.
Well, you're an ugly one, aren't you?
The man on the floor said.
Well, you're no beauty yourself. I can live with it. Well, so can I. Good. Are you the one who blew my door in? He did.
Belden pointed at Belgarath and then helped the fellow to his feet.
How did you manage that?
The grubby little man asked Belgarath curiously.
I don't smell any chemicals at all.
It's a gift, Belgarath replied. You're Sinji, I take it.
I am. Sinji the Clubfoot. Senior member of the faculty of the College of Applied Alchemy.
He thumped on the side of his head with the heel of his hand.
Explosions. Always make my ears ring,
he noted.
You, my ugly friend,
he said to Belden.
There is a barrel of beer over there in the corner. Why don't you bring me some? Get some for yourself and your friends as well.
We're going to get along fairly well, Belden said.
Sinji limped toward a stone table in the center of the room. His left leg was several inches shorter than his right, and his left foot was grotesquely deformed. He leafed through several sheets of parchment.
Good, he said to Belgarath. At least your explosion did not scatter my calculations all over the room.
He looked at them.
As long as you're here, you might as well find something to sit down on.
Belden brought him a cup of beer, then went back to the corner where the barrel was and filled three more cups.
"That is really an ugly fellow,"
Sinji noted, hauling himself up and sitting on top of the table.
"I sort of like him, though. I haven't met anybody quite like that for almost 1,000 years.
Belgarath and Garion exchanged a quick look.
"That's quite a long time," Belgarath said cautiously.
Yes,
Senji agreed, taking a drink from his cup. He made a face.
"Oh, it's gone flat again. You there," he called to Belden. "There's an earthenware jar on the shelf, just above that barrel. Be a good fellow and dump a couple handfuls of that powder into the beer. It wakes it up again."
He looked back at Belgarath.
"What was it you wanted to talk about?"
he asked.
"What's so important that you have to go around blowing doors apart?"
"In a minute," Belgarath said.
He crossed to where the little clubfoot sat.
"Do you mind?" he asked.
He reached out and lightly touched his fingertips to the smelly man's bald head.
"Well?" Belden asked.
Belgarath nodded. "He doesn't use it very often. But it is there. Garion, fix the door. I think we will want to talk in private."
Garion looked helplessly at the shattered remains of the door.
"It's not in very good shape, Grandfather,"
he said dubiously.
"Make a new one, then."
"Oh, I guess I forgot about that."
"You need some practice anyway. Just make sure that you can get it open later. I don't want to have to blow it down again when the time comes to leave."
Garion gathered in his will, concentrated a moment, pointed at the empty opening and said,
"Door."
The opening was immediately filled again.
"Door?"
Belden said incredulously.
"He does that sometimes," Belgarath said. "I have been trying to break him of the habit, but he backslides from time to time."
Senji's eyes were narrow as he looked at them.
"Well, now," he said, "I seem to have some talented guests. I haven't met a real sorcerer in a long, long time."
"How long?"
Belgarath asked bluntly.
"Oh, 12 centuries or so, I guess. A Grolem was here giving lectures in the College of Comparative Theology. Stuffy sort of fellow, as I recall. But then most Grolems are."
"All right, Sinji," Belgarath said. "Just how old are you?"
I think I was born during the 15th century,"
Senji replied.
"What year is it now?"
5379,
Garion told him.
"Already?"
Senji said.
"Where does the time go?"
He counted it up on his fingers.
"I guess that would make me about 3900 or so."
"When did you find out about the will and the word?"
Belgarath pressed.
"The what?"
"Sorcery."
"Is that what you call it?"
Sinji pondered a bit.
"I suppose the term is sort of accurate at that. I like that. The will and the word," he mused. "Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?"
"When did you make the discovery?" Belgarath repeated.
"During the 15th century, obviously. Otherwise I would have died in the normal course of time, like everybody else."
"You did not have any instruction?"
"Who was around in the 15th century to instruct me? I just stumbled over it."
Belgarath and Belden looked at each other. Then Belgarath sighed and covered his eyes with one hand.
"It happens once in a while," Belden said. "Some people just fall into it."
"I know, but it's so discouraging.
Look at all of the centuries our master took instructing us, and this fellow just picks it up on his own.
He looked back at Senji.
Why don't you just tell us about it? He suggested. Try not to leave too much out.
Do we really have time, Grandfather? Garion asked.
We have to make time, Belden told him. It was one of our master's final commandments. Any time we come across somebody who's picked up the secret spontaneously, we are supposed to investigate. Not even the gods know how it happens.
Senji slid down from the table and limped over to an overflowing bookcase. He rummaged around for a moment and finally selected a book that looked much the worse for wear.
Sorry about the shape it's in, he apologized. It's been blown up a few times.
He limped back to the table and opened the book.
I wrote this during the 23rd century. I noticed that I was starting to get a little absent-minded, so I wanted to get it all down while it was still fresh in my memory.
Makes sense, Belden said. My grim-faced friend over there has been suffering from some shocking lapses of memory lately. Of course, that's to be expected from somebody who's 19,000 years old.
Do you mind? Belgaroth said acidly.
You mean it's been longer?
Shut up, Belden.
Here we are, Senji said.
And then he began to read aloud.
For the next 1,400 years, the Melsine Empire prospered. Far removed from the theological and political squabbles of the western part of the continent, Melsine culture was secular, civilized, and highly educated. Slavery was unknown, and trade with the Angoraks and their subject peoples in Coranda and Alesia was extremely profitable. The old imperial capital at Messina became a major center of learning.
Excuse me, Belgarath said, but isn't that taken directly from emperors of Melsina and Meloria?
Naturally, Senji replied, without any embarrassment. Plagiarism is the first rule of scholarship. Please, don't interrupt.
Sorry, Belgarath said.
Unfortunately, Senji read on, some of the thrust of Melsine scholarship turned toward the arcane. Their major field of concentration lay in the field of alchemy.
He looked at Belgarath.
This is where it gets original, he said.
He cleared his throat.
It was a Melsine alchemist, Senji, the club-footed, who inadvertently utilized sorcery during the course of one of his experiments.
You speak of yourself in the third person? Belden asked.
It was a 23rd century affectation, Senji replied. Autobiography was considered to be in terribly bad taste. Immodest, don't you know? It was a very boring century. I yawned all the way through it.
He went back to reading.
Senji, a 15th-century practitioner of alchemy at the university in the imperial city, was notorious for his ineptitude.
He paused.
I might want to edit that part just a bit,
he noted critically. He glanced at the next line.
Oh, this just won't do at all, he added. To be quite frank about it, he read with distaste, Senji's experiments more often turned gold into lead than the reverse. In a fit of colossal frustration at the failure of his most recent experiment, Senji accidentally converted a half-ton of brass plumbing into solid gold. An immediate debate arose, involving the Bureau of Currency, the Bureau of Mines, the Department of Sanitation, the Faculty of the College of Applied Alchemy, and the Faculty of the College of Comparative Theology, about which organization should have control
of Senji's discovery. After about 300 years of argumentation, it suddenly occurred to the disputants that Senji was not merely talented, but also appeared to be immortal. In the name of scientific experimentation, the varying bureaus, departments, and faculties agreed an effort should be made to have him assassinated to verify that fact.
They didn't, Belden said.
Oh, yes, Senji replied with a grim smugness. Malsines are inquisitive to the point of idiocy. They will go to any length to prove a theory.
Well, what did you do?
Senji smirked so hard that his long nose and pointed chin almost touched.
A well-known defenestrator was retained to throw the irascible old alchemist from a high window in one of the towers of the university administration building, he read. The experiment had a threefold purpose. What the curious bureaus wished to find out was, A, if Senji was, in fact, unkillable, B, what means he would take to save his life while plummeting toward the paved courtyard, and C, if it might be possible to discover the secret of flight by giving him no other alternative.
The club-footed alchemist tapped the back of his hand against the text.
I've always been a little proud of that sentence. It's so beautifully balanced.
It's a masterpiece, Belden approved, slapping the little man on the shoulder so hard that it nearly knocked him off of the table. Here, he said, taking Senji's cup. Let me refill that for you.
His brow creased. There was a surge, and the cup was full again. Senji took a sip and fell to gasping.
It's a drink that a Nadrak woman of my acquaintance brews, Belden told him. Robust, isn't it?
Very,
Senji agreed in a hoarse voice.
I'll go on with your story, my friend.
Senji cleared his throat several times and went on.
What the officials and learned men actually found out as a result of their experiment was that it is extremely dangerous to threaten the life of a sorcerer, even one as inept as Senji. The defenestrator found himself suddenly translocated to a position some 1,500 meters above the harbor, 5 miles distant. At one instant he had been wrestling Senji toward the window. At the next, he found himself standing on insubstantial air high above a fishing fleet. His demise occasioned no particular sorrow, except among the fishermen whose nets were badly damaged by his rapid descent.
That was a masterful passage, Belden chortled. But where did you discover the meaning of the word translocation?
I was reading an old text on the exploits of Belgarath the Sorcerer, and I...
Senji stopped, going very pale, turned and gaped at Geryon's grandfather.
It's a terrible letdown, isn't it? Belden said. We always told him he ought to try to look more impressive.
You are in no position to talk, the old man said.
You're the one with the earth-shaking reputation, Belden shrugged. I'm just a flunky. I'm along for comic relief.
You're really enjoying this, aren't you, Belden?
I haven't had so much fun in years. Wait until I tell Paul.
You keep your mouth shut, you hear me?
Oh, yes, oh mighty Belgarath, Belden said mockingly.
Belgarath turned to Geryon.
Now you understand why silk irritates me so much, he said.
Yes, grandfather, I think I do.
Senji was still a little wild-eyed.
Take another drink, Senji, Belden advised. It's not nearly so hard to accept when your wits are half-fuddled.
Senji began to tremble. Then he drained his cup in one gulp without so much as a cough.
"Now there's a brave lad," Belden congratulated him. "Please read on. Your story is fascinating."
Falteringly, the little alchemist continued.
In an outburst of righteous indignation, Senji then proceeded to chastise the department heads who had consorted to do violence to his person. It was finally only a personal appeal from the emperor himself that persuaded the old man to desist from some fairly exotic punishments. After that, the department heads were more than happy to allow Senji to go his own way unmolested. On his own, Senji established a private academy and advertised for students. While his pupils never became sorcerers of the magnitude of Belgrath, Polgra, Tuchik, or Zadar, some of them were nonetheless able to perform some rudimentary applications of the principle their master had inadvertently discovered. This immediately lifted them far above the magicians and witches practicing their art forms within the confines of the university.
Senji looked up.
There's more, but most of it deals with my experiments in the field of alchemy.
I think that is the crucial part, Belgarath said. Let's go back a bit. What were you feeling at the exact moment that you changed all of that brass into gold?
Irritation,
Senji shrugged, closing his book.
Or maybe more than that. I'd worked out my calculations so very carefully, but the bar of lead I was working on just lay there, not doing anything. I was infuriated. Then I just sort of pulled everything around me inside, and I could feel an enormous power building up. I shouted, "Change!" mostly at the lead bar, but there were some pipes running through the room as well, and my concentration was a little different than that.
You're lucky you didn't change the walls, too, Belden told him. Were you ever able to do it again?
Senji shook his head.
I tried, but I never seemed to be able to put together that kind of anger again.
Are you always angry when you do this sort of thing?
The hunchback asked.
Almost always, Senji admitted. If I am not angry, I cannot be certain of the results. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, that seems to be the key to it, Belgarath, Belden said. Rage is the common element in every case we've come across.
As I remember, I was irritated the first time I did it as well, Belgarath conceded.
So was I, Belden said. With you, I think.
Why did you take it out on that tree, then?
At the last second, I remembered that our master was fond of you, and I didn't want to hurt his feelings by obliterating you.
That probably saved your life. If you had said, "Be not," you would not be here now. Belden scratched at his stomach.
That might explain why we find so few cases of spontaneous sorcery, he mused. When somebody's enraged at something, his first impulse is usually to destroy it. This might have happened many, many times, but the spontaneous sorcerers probably annihilated themselves in the moment of discovery.
I would not be at all surprised that you've hit it, Belgarath agreed. Senji had gone pale again.
I think there is something I need to know here, he said.
It's the first rule, Garion told him. The universe won't let us unmake things. If we try, all of the force turns inward, and we are the ones who vanish. With a shudder, he remembered the obliteration of Tuchik. He looked up at Belden.
Did I get that right? He asked. Yeah, fairly close. The explanation's a little more complex, but you described the process pretty accurately.
Did that by any chance happen to any of your students? Belgrath asked him. The alchemist frowned.
It might have, he admitted. Quite a few of them disappeared. I thought they'd just gone off someplace, but maybe not.
Are you taking any more students these days? Senji shook his head.
I don't have the patience for it anymore. Only about 1 in 10 could even grasp the concept, and the rest stood around whining and sniveling and blaming me for not explaining it any better. I went back to alchemy. I almost never use sorcery anymore.
We were told that you can actually do it, Garion said. Turn brass or lead into gold, I mean.
Oh, yes,
Senji replied in an offhand way.
It's really fairly easy, but the process is more expensive than the gold is worth. That's what I'm trying to do now. Simplify the process and substitute less expensive chemicals. I can't get anyone to fund my experiments, though.
Garion felt a sudden throbbing against his hip.